So I think we're about ready to get started. My mic is very quiet, so let me adjust it. Can you guys hear me okay? Let's kick this off then. Okay, so welcome, first of all. Thanks for coming to this session. It's an exciting time for this team. We're launching something new this week, and I'm really pleased that you've come along to find out more about it. My name is Josh Twist. I have a Twitter account. At Josh Twist, which you could follow. It's completely optional. It's not mandatory as part of participation. I work on a couple of technologies. One is Azure API management, which you're here to see and find out about. Another is hybrid connections that I was just plugging to the folks already in the room. There's a session tomorrow at 1 o'clock on that, Santosh, 1 o'clock, right? Yeah, so I'd recommend going that. It's an awesome way of building hybrid apps. This one is all about API management. It's an introduction, so it's kind of a level 200, 300 session. We'll talk for a while about why we got into this market, why we think it's important, help identify some scenarios. We'll all get warm and cozy about the idea of APIs and API management. And then I'll do some demos and show you how the product works and give you a much more detailed tour than you just saw on Monday's keynote. I want to find out a little bit more about you. So this, for me, this is actually my first TechEd. I've never been before. I'm amazed by the size of the event. It's huge. I've been to Build a couple of times, but I've never been to a TechEd before. And I hear lots about this mix of people that are IT pros and developers. You know, you're either one or the other. So I want to find out more about the audience. So can you identify yourselves? If you're an IT pro, put your hand up. Actually, no, you're going to need to stand up. Stand up if you're an IT pro. Come on, do it. Get some exercise. No, stand up. That's sitting down. You guys are good. Like, this is a you all need to come in. Seriously. Okay, so smaller, and the rest of you are developers, right? Is that true? Yeah, I think so. I'm going to come and find out. Can we get this mic live, right? It's time for a little bit of audience participation. If you're not going to play ball with me, I'm going to pick on you. So what do you do, sir?
I'm a developer.
You're a developer, literally like you write code for a living.
Exactly. Right.
Awesome. Who's one of the IT pros? I'm going to go over there and get that guy. Okay, here's one. I want to find out what you guys do.
Principal Development Manager.
Oh, but you consider yourself an IT pro. Do the other IT pros in the room think this guy's cheating?
Yeah,
it sounds a bit like a developer to me. This guy was an IT pro. Are you a valid IT pro?
IT Director, Infrastructure and Operations.
I think that counts, right? That's definitely an IT pro. Okay, awesome. I feel like I know you guys a little bit better. It's good. I've never been here before. So thanks for that. So let's get started with some more serious conversation then. So I want to start by, as I mentioned, talking about the idea of API management and why people would do this. What are the motivations? How can this be valuable to your business? What are the opportunities that customers were talking to us about that made us realize we needed to go and fill these gaps? It's really about growing business in one way or another. You know, the potential is the word I would use for this slide to sum it up. What we're saying is you guys, either you already have a ton of data and services inside your businesses that you could unlock value by allowing other people to come and use them. You could unlock value in your business, and we'll talk about the different types of unlocking that's happening as we work with customers. Maybe, I don't know actually, does anybody here work at a startup or a smaller business that is planning on creating an API that it's going to be its main way of doing business? Is there anybody here who falls into that guise? I can't see any hands. I guess that's not the tech ed crowd, right? You guys are all from bigger shops. So there are many businesses that are doing this, where the only way they do business is through an API. Who's heard of Twilio? Show of hands. So most of you. And for those that haven't, as an example, Twilio are a business that they do telecoms. So if you wanted to build an app or a service that, for example, called a patient the night before his appointment and read him a message with a robotic voice or sent him an SMS. Now, traditionally, this would have been a difficult thing to do. You know, you'd have to install a PBX box and go and talk to, have a big million-dollar deal with a telecommunications company. Now, with a service like Twilio's, you can just sign up for their API. In about 20 minutes, you'll be sending text messages. And so their main go-to-market is actually what they sell is kind of access to services through an API. So that's one example. But we see tons of customers doing other things with it, and I want to talk about some of those. Another setup here, I like this quote, actually, is from a guy called Byron Dieter. He's an investor at Bessemer Ventures. And I like this quote because it highlights a couple of interesting points that I hadn't grokked until I started working in this space. I don't like to read from a slide, but I'm actually going to do it this time. So in little more than a decade, APIs have transitioned from relative obscurity. And I'm going to pause there because this is so true for me. So I've been a developer for near 20 years now, I think. And APIs have always meant something to me, you know, whether it's at some sort of really low level, dealing with COM or dealing with .NET APIs in the base class libraries, all the way up to web services and what we think of as HTTP APIs today. But it was just recently that I realized this term has literally left the kind of technical arena and has become a common term in so much so that my wife isn't very technical. She doesn't really care about or interested in what I do. But she knows what an API is now, because she knows that an API is how her Fitbit calls to the cloud and saves data. She knows it's how the smart scale we have at home communicates with the smartphone that she has. So she's aware of what APIs are. So I think this is very true. So from relative obscurity to become the digital glue that empowers developers to create new software applications, partnerships, and even new businesses. And then this next phrase threw me. The business-to-developer market. So business-to-developer, I'm familiar with business to consumer, I'm familiar with business to enterprise and business to employee, all these common scenarios, but this was kind of new. And it is definitely an interesting scenario that I want to talk about briefly. It's quickly becoming one of the fastest growing opportunities within cloud computing. So you can see why Azure would be interested in this. Now, at the heart of all this, of course, is business, and business is usually about making money one way or another. So I want to talk about some of the business models that help me think about how I categorize APIs and why people would use API management. Let's create one vector first. So an API is typically one of two things. It's either public or it's private. And when we look at APIs out in the world today, there are a lot of public APIs. And if anybody's seen programmable web, you will have seen that the growth of public APIs has literally been exponential. It's one of those kind of hockey stick charts where there's now, on programmable web, I think something like 13,000 different APIs you can just sign up to use. Some of them are free, some you pay for, to find out stuff, run data analyses, to get the weather, you know, to translate lat long into a street address and a street number, all that kind of thing and way more. So that's huge. But people think of that as being the tip of the iceberg. That underneath that is this behemoth, of which I'm sure you guys are familiar with getting a sense of the audience, of private APIs that are APIs that are used between business partners, you know, two businesses, or that are perhaps used just internally, you know, to solve your own business problems. You'll have a ton of APIs that are used that no one outside the business ever sees. So that's one way I want to split the way we think about this. And then the other is when it comes to how we make money out of these, typically falls onto either we directly monetize it, so Twilio would be an example of that, where they literally charge for access to the API, or we indirectly monetize it. So let's go through some of these examples. So first of all, we'll talk about public, which is, again, that tip of the iceberg. And let's talk about specifically public and directly monetizing an API. I have a couple of examples that are well known in this industry, so I'll share them with you. One was Twilio that we talked about. You know, if you decided today that you wanted to build a software business, and the way you were going to do this was as a software as a service, and the way people used it was through an API, you're pretty much in this market. You're doing direct monetization of APIs. If you're indirectly monetizing, oh, actually, no, I have another example here. Let me talk about another good example. People like this one. So Walgreens. Are most people here from the US? Everybody heard? Anybody not heard of Walgreens? Great, you're going to get this. So Walgreens, big drugstore. The story goes that they were going to build a phone application that allowed people to upload pictures from their, you know, their iPhone or Android phone or Windows phone to a Walgreens store, have it printed out, and then they go and pick it up. Great service. But one of the challenges with any app is it's very difficult to get presence in the market. It's a real, you know, it's a real nightmare actually getting any visibility into an app store marketplace. You can just pour money into that and go nowhere. So they had a different idea. What if we created an API and asked developers at large to come and use that API and integrate this service into their own applications? We all know how many photo apps there are out there in the world. You know, there's literally hundreds of them. And those developers are starved for revenue. They would, you know, they love different ways of getting extra money. So Wellmark's idea was, let's put this API out there, let's let people use it, and then for every picture that developer has printed out via his application, we'll give him some revenue share, we'll give him 10 cents. It's a win-win deal. And apparently it worked pretty well. The rumor is that, you know, they have much better visibility in the App Store. They get way more pictures printed this way than they would have done if they'd done their own app. Classic example of a directly monetizable API. Now, in indirect, this is a little less obvious, but there's one very common area where this is applicable. So if you were today to start a business as software as a service business in this big SaaS economy that we see taking place, so people like Box, DocuSign, Dropbox, you know, all of those guys, they need an API to enter that ecosystem, and it has to be very accessible. Because when businesses are choosing these SaaS vendors, they have to integrate well with the other solutions. So if you're going to buy Box, it sure as hell better integrate well with Salesforce, you know, if you're a Salesforce customer. And the only way to do that is have APIs that are extremely visible and extremely easy to use. It's one example. Another example is a somewhat more speculative bet on the value of APIs and the value of your data and services that many, many businesses are taking really seriously now. I'll pull one example from the public domain as well. It's British Airways, who have a public API program where people can sign up for an API and get access to British Airways. Remember, this is an older business, so it's not just the new kids doing this, like Walgreens, another older business that's getting into this game. British Airways, you could sign up and get data about their flight arrival, around spaces in parking lots. And the idea is that if somebody integrates that into their website or into a service or into an application, then generally that's better for British Airways customers because they'll get a better experience when they use that application, making British Airways a more attractive brand to users of that service or application. And this is happening really. You know, this is a very real thing. I have calls regularly, even with financial institutions that are trying to do this, that are trying to find new ways of distributing their content and to get in front of customers and new channels, new ways of engaging existing customers. Let's talk about private APIs. Maybe this will resonate even most with this audience if we talk about directly monetizing. Anybody in the room work in a business that has some kind of contract with another business and they transact over some kind of API? So it's a good half of the room. And this just makes sense. I have a story, actually. I used to work for in the UK, no surprise, for the UK's largest travel consolidator. And we had our own website, and we sold flights on that website. But then we decided we could make way more money if we sold flights through other people's websites as well. But that was always done with very special agreements. You know, there'd be a long negotiation over how much commission takes place and how much traffic they were allowed to push our way, et cetera, et cetera. A classic deal of directly monetizing a private API. Only the select club could use this. But I will say as well, that was a nightmare project because we were running our website using the same internal API that we decided to put out there on the net. And one of our first partners we integrated with brought our main website down because they accidentally had some for loop that did something silly, and they literally crashed our service. And we realized at that point, whoa, we need to protect ourselves because we have a P0, we have a most important service to support here, which is our own website. And then these guys are kind of like, yeah, we love them and all. They give us money, but you know, they're not allowed to bring down our primary system. So that's an example of business-to-business and private APIs that are directly monetized. This last quadrant here is perhaps the most vague, but I think is becoming one of the biggest and most real. So what we're seeing is there is a role in business, if you read the Gartner reports, called a business transformation leader. And they've been looking around at industry and trying to find ways that businesses are succeeding. And a key trend there is agility. Businesses that are more agile and can respond and work together internally better are doing better externally. And there are a number of ways that you can do this. And one is to have a program that means it's very, very easy for other departments to come and use existing APIs within a separate department in that business. You're going to get accelerated agility if it's very easy for them to do that. How many of you have work at a business that's pretty large, typically, that has separate departments, and then every so often another department comes to you and needs to communicate with an API? Anybody fall into that category here? Okay, great. So about like a quarter of you. And I bet the rest of you can imagine this being a very real thing. It has the same problems. This is happening a ton right now in Microsoft with our own MSIT. You know the business is undergoing a lot of change. We have a new CEO. It's one Microsoft. We have to work better together. And a key driving force there is that we have to be super agile in terms of the way that our systems communicate. But the minute you decide that's something you're going to do, you need to put protection in place. Again, your partners are going to bring you down just when they're trying the system out. You need to put protection in place. Another way that you can see innovation, this is also a thing that happens at Microsoft, is even employees or people just wanting to innovate without some kind of big project structure, want to get access to internal data in a way that's approved and audited, et cetera, so that they can go and do their own innovation and their own integrations. Everyone's becoming a developer these days. There's ways of hooking things up. But to do that, you need APIs. You need a way to expose that data so other people can come in, organically discover it, and do inventive stuff with it. So there are internal API programs, and they're the key to this idea of a private but indirect monetization, because the money there comes from the fact that you're going to make more money by being a better, optimized, more agile business. That makes sense? There are a couple of very famous examples here that I'm just not going to mention. Some of you in the room are probably nodding going, I know who you mean. I know who you mean. Come and talk to me afterwards and we'll talk about it. Okay, so everybody's convinced. We have 100% agreement that having an API program, be it a public monetizable one, a public indirectly monetizable because it's going to market and make your brand better and find you new customers and get you more engaged with existing ones, is a great idea. Or you're going to internally have an API program that's going to help your business be more innovative. The minute you make that decision, you have a bunch of problems to go solve. Problems like, how do you engage with developers? So we have a room, actually, 75%, maybe more, developers right now. So you guys will know, and actually so will the guys who are IT pros, I'm sure, that trying to integrate with something that doesn't have good documentation is not fun, right? It's awful, in fact. And having suffered at the hand of internal APIs, I think I'm lucky if I get anything beyond some sort of sheet that shows roughly what the XML looks like. No help beyond that. So having great documentation and great ways of engaging with developers and making that super lightweight and consistent is going to be key to success in all of these domains. Thinking about really advanced concepts to make it more engaging, like time to first successful call. So this is a measure that people who are really serious about this API business have that considers how long does it take from the moment somebody decides to try out an API to having their first successful call. That's the time to first successful call. And there's a number of, Let me get a drink. Better, right. And there are a number of techniques you can use here. One I showed in the keynote on Monday is the console, the interactive console. Get people interacting and playing with your API in real time. You know, that way they're going to learn it, they're going to love it, they're going to come away. It takes them seconds to get to that first successful call from the minute they decide to try it. Key indicator of success. It means they're not going to go and switch to someone else's API or just give up on the project. If you're trying to make a business out of this in some way, then commonly you need some kind of business policies that describe how you sell your APIs. A common example is to think about some of the vendors that sell through an API today, like, for example, SendGrid that sell emails, right? Those guys, they have packages where they sell a smaller package for a smaller amount of money that has less emails or less API calls included, up to a much larger package that costs more money, includes more API calls. This is all kind of boring stuff. There's nothing to do with your core premise of sending an email. It's all stuff you don't want to spend time writing code for. So you need a solution to help you do it. And here's a common one. So many of us working in businesses, and this applies to Microsoft, will have lots of APIs that have tons of great data and value in those services. But unfortunately, they're hiding behind some really old, croaky SOAP 1.1 or something even older than that interface. And if you really want to get the world excited about these data and services, you're going to have to use something more modern. You know, an iOS developer isn't going to be very happy calling something that's spewing out XML. They want to use JSON, they want to use REST, they want to use HTTP. So we need to create and expose services that developers are going to appreciate. How do you understand the behavior? Can anyone imagine today having a website that you deploy and not having analytics for that website? You know, your business says, we need to run a campaign, go and set me up a website. It's infeasible that you would do that without having some kind of monitoring that's telling you, know, is it successful? Am I having any errors? What's the response time? Where's the traffic coming from? Which pages are most popular? How are people clicking and navigating around? An API is no different. An API is basically a digital website for consumption by computers or machines, right, or clients. But you need to understand exactly the same things. That's a key part of what you would need if you're going to have an API program. And then finally, I mentioned this a few times, certainly as we talked about partners and internal APIs, how do you protect your core business system? So sure, you want to make these partners happy, but then what about the primary service? How are you going to protect that? How are you going to stop one partner from abusing the system and overusing it at the cost of another partner? These are all things that you're going to have to think about. And this is what we think of as API management. So that's what our solution is trying to solve. And in October last year, we had a, get ready for the joke, we had an epiphany. We had an epiphany, and we made a purchase, and we acquired a company based out of Washington, D.C. called Epiphany in October last year. And there's the announcement on the screen. And so since then, we've been working hard. In fact, the CTO of the company is here in front of us. And we've been working hard. These four guys are from this team, three guys. We've been integrating that. And so now we are delighted to announce, as you saw on Monday, that we now have a product called Azure API Management that is based on that acquisition. And that's what this session's all about. So I'm going to show you some demos. This thing is designed to solve those problems and make it turnkey so that you can focus on your core problem. What are you trying to solve? I'm trying to sell telephone calls, or I'm trying to provide access to my flight data. You don't want to have to worry about all of those things. That's why we're here, and that's why we have this service. So let me give you a bit of a tour as to what you actually get in the box and how it comes together and what the different pieces mean. So in the center of the slide, you can see that Azure API Management is comprised of three primary components, or logical components. One is a publisher portal. I'll talk about that in a moment. The other is the proxy, and then the other part is the developer portal. So some of these, in fact, all of these we kind of saw at the keynote on Monday. The publisher portal is where the publisher, or the API owner, I'm guessing you guys in this case most likely, would go to kind of configure the experience, to monitor the analytics, to manage this whole system, right? The developer portal is where developers or partners go to learn about the system. Because what they want to build is apps or services or integrate to their existing services. And those apps then call our proxy. And our proxy is mapped to call the original back end. And the proxy is where the magic happens. So the proxy is where we collect all the analytics data. It's where we can do magical rewriting, so we make the API look different. So that back-end API can look, you know, ugly, and we can make it look pretty, or vice versa, if you so choose. We can do format conversion, like going from XML to JSON, or vice versa, again, if you prefer, if you need to do that for some reason. We can do rate limiting. We can stop that request in its flight, so it only gets this far, and send back a response, as we saw on Monday, that said, whoa, you've gone too fast there, partner. You're only, you know, you're going to have to come back in a minute's time. So this is the layout of the land. This is kind of API management, what we do. So one more point here, actually. We have no, we have a preference. We'd love you to host the API in Azure, but it absolutely isn't a requirement. We don't really care where it's hosted. So that API can be hosted on premises. It can be hosted in even in a rival cloud. It can be hosted anywhere. As long as our proxy can access it via HTTP, then we're good to go. So no preference. It can be written in any language. It can be written in PHP, Java. Could be talking to an Oracle database. As long as it talks the language of the web, HTTP, we're good to go. So enough slides. I think it's time for some demos. So I mentioned it's available in the Azure portal. And here it is, our beautiful little icon, as you can see, a cloud with kind of an interface for API, application programming interface into it. And creating a new API management instance just takes a short while. So you come in, new, app services, API management, create. You enter some details into here. And then it can take up to 30 minutes for us to provision an instance for you. It's usually quicker. And that's because we're actually putting some pretty heavy pieces behind that for you. We're creating, you know, typically a number of VMs, some for handling the web traffic and being the proxy, and others to process those analytics. So we need to churn through that data and generate those graphs, and that takes some horsepower. So it takes a little while because there's some heavy lifting to do. I specify a name that's going to become part of the URL. I enter some other data. I'm not going to show you all this because obviously we're not going to wait for that. We're going to look to an example that we've already created. So here we are. I'm going to go into this one here called API Demo. And I get, you know, the usual tabs I'd expect to get in the AUX portal. I have a dashboard that gives me some level of information around what's going on there, but we have much deeper analytics than this. Shows me how I'm doing against my service usage at the moment. I'm just on two calls, so I'm in pretty good shape. I can scale the service. So during preview, we have two tiers, developer tier and standard tier. And standard tier can go all the way up to four instances. And that comes with 800, if four instances, you get 800 million API calls per month. So we're talking some pretty serious load. If you need more than four instances, because you want to do more than that, then just reach out to the team. I'll make sure you guys have my email address, you have my Twitter handle already, and you can come and talk to us directly. I can configure stuff in here as well. So the heavy lifting is done inside the portal. If you want to have your APIs behind a custom domain, and particularly your developer portal behind a custom domain, you might want to say developer.foobar.com, you know, depending on what business you work on. Then we support that. And of course, we support, under custom, we also support SSL certificates. So you can do HTTPS over the service as well by uploading your own custom SSL certs. But if you really want to get into the meat of API management, then you need to go to our publisher portal that I showed on Monday. And to get there, we just go over either to the quick start or to the dashboard and hit manage. And that's going to pop out our publisher portal with our management experience. So what you see here, first of all, is kind of a secondary dashboard for API publishers. And it has, again, some at-a-glance views of the traffic that's coming in over the service. So I don't have a particularly busy service right here, right now. We're going to add some more pieces in a moment. In fact, what I'm going to do is go and delete this guy because we're going to re-add him in a second. Where is the delete? As I go through here, what you'll see is in some of these screens that we have, I can't remember where I did. Where do I delete, Vlad? Oh, in the list, of course. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So over here, I can delete this API, and then we'll go and recreate that one in a moment. What we do is when we provision a new service for you, we actually pre-create an API so you can see how it works and what the service looks like. And this is a very simple echo API. So behind it is just an API that kind of echoes whatever you send at it. So if I send boo to the API, it'll send boo right back to me. And this is just to show you, give you an idea of how the system is set up. But I'm not going to go through that in any detail. I'm going to show you how we add a new API. And so let's do that right away. And I'm going to do it with an API that we created, really for another set of test purposes. This is how I'm going to make my first $1 million, by selling this API to you guys. It's called a calculator API, and it allows you to add two numbers. And it just takes a little HTTP request over to us, and I'm going to charge, I think, a reasonable price is about $10 per 1,000 additions. Okay, so I'm going to show you how it works. Has anyone seen this tool? It's called Postman. It's an awesome little app for testing out REST APIs. It's very, very simple. So all I'm going to do is say the URL I need to hit is calc/add query string A equals 5 and B equals 4. OK, great. So that's my URL and my parameters for the addition. It's a post. And then I just hit send. I don't need to put a body in, so I'm just going to delete that. I hit send, and that should give me a response in a moment. Here we go. There's my response. You can see that we even put a little advert in the service that says it was brought to you by Azure API Management. This is a raw API. I am not going through our proxy right now. We're going to manage it in just a second, right? It's a raw API, and as you can see, it's highly accurate in adding integer numbers. So I think it was. I hope it was. What did we do? There you go. That's right, right? No, sorry, I have to ask. I'm so confident in my own coding that I can't add two numbers. OK, so you guys get the idea? What we're going to do now is manage this API so I can make my first $1 million. So I'm actually just going to cut and paste this here to save me typing later. I copy that in. And we go into the publisher portal, and we say APIs, add an API. Oh, let me show you one thing. We can import APIs. If you don't want to do a ton of typing and you have the right definitions, we support importing in WADL format and Swagger format. And we can also export these. So if you have these formats, which are very common now and prevalent for REST APIs, then these can be imported. And we have plans to add more specifications as well and more ways of doing this. But I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way. I'm going to do a bit of typing for you guys. So I'm going to add an API. We are going to call it the calculator matron, because I think that will sell better. echoapi.cloudapp.net/calc. What I've just specified in this line here is the back end. I've specified where the actual real back end is, and everything's going to map onto that from now on. And then I just need to specify a suffix here. I'm going to go with calc again, and I hit save, and that'll be created in just a second. So here we go. I can set some settings on this, and this is where I start to put some metadata that might help people. So this is the awesomest calculator. Oop, I can't spell. I need a spelling API as well. Calculator API and is the most accurate ever. You get the idea. So this is going to be taken, and it's going to be used later when I show you the developer portal. So let me hit save. Great. Now let's add some operations for this guy. So the operation we're going to add is that add operation. I could add more, because we support more. And if you recall, that was a post. So I'm going to specify post in here. And then I need to specify the template. So this was add a equals a. Notice how I'm delimiting a parameter here with that little syntax. And b equals b. Now, if I'm really going to make some money out of this guy, I feel like it has to have the coolest, like, hippest API ever. So I don't like these query string things. I think they look kind of old-fashioned. One thing we can do is we can actually rewrite the URL in our proxy for you. So that's the original URL on the back end that I just showed you guys, but we're going to make it look different. So we're going to say add, like that, which I think is pretty cool, right? So now that's going to be the input format for my new calculator service. That's all I had to do to make this happen. It's going to rewrite it on the fly and map those parameters. So that's pretty nice. Caching. So I mentioned this on Monday again, but this thing's probably pretty cacheable, right? I don't think the data for a given URL will change. If I say add 3 and 4, then the answer is always going to be, you know, 7. So let's turn on caching. And we can make that vary by query string parameters. Don't have any of those. Don't need to worry about that. I could probably vary by headers, so by some of these accept headers. And I can set a duration of the cache. So 3 seconds sounds pretty good for now. Now we want to provide some metadata for the parameters. Notice how it's automatically sensed that I had an A and B parameter. So I don't have to go and add those. It just looked at the URL and worked it out. And then I'm going to put some metadata in here. This is the first part of the sum. This is the other. And I can specify types. This is all just metadata. Again, this is where Waddle or Swagger would help you. I can specify a number. Or if I want to be more precise and the value I want isn't in here, then I can just type something in. Now, many APIs are difficult to use. The addition API is pretty easy. You know, it just takes some numbers. But you can provide example values to help your developers understand what values are good to put in these systems. So let's put in a 3 and a 4 as a clue for people who don't know what addition would do. I can enter query parameters. I can enter a description about the body. And I can add a representation. I don't need a body here, so I'm not going to do that. Now, another thing developers are going to want, or partners when they're using your API, is to know what the responses mean and what they look like. So let's give some data on that as well. So let's add an example response for an error, which could be a 500, right? Or for a 200, I can enter some metadata. And then I can enter different representations. So sometimes services support this thing called Coneg, which is, you know, I do text and XML, or I do JSON. Let me show you that we could add all those things. I'm just going to put one in for text XML right now. I'm not even going to be accurate because I don't want to waste time. But this is going to be example documentation that could help developers to use your API. This wouldn't help because it's inaccurate, but you get the idea. So I'm going to save that. And we'll see in a moment how that data is all used to provide this great developer portal experience. Right, so I think we're pretty much done with that particular Calculator-Matron addition API. Now what I want to do is to bundle it into a product so that developers have something they can subscribe to when they want to come and use it. So I'm going to create a product for this now. I think we'll already have 2 example products in here. In fact, I might have a third. And products are just really ways of grouping APIs and providing access to a group of developers. So notice if I zoom in here that administrators have access to the new product, my starter product, administrators, developers, and guests. So you can group partners into groups, and then you can assign them access to a product which provides access to APIs. So very, very flexible mesh of configuration that you can define. So I'm going to create a new product very quickly, show you some of the options in here. This is going to be called TechEd Product. Enter a description again. And notice that down here, I could require approval. So what this means is when a developer comes to the developer portal and says, hey, I'd like to use this product, you can set it up 2 ways. They automatically get access, so you don't have to interfere with them. If you're in that well-marked scenario, that's what you want, because you want as many people printing pictures as possible. There's no need to restrict that. However, in some scenarios, you want to kind of have some kind of agreement or discussion beforehand, then you can require approval. So you get a notification that this person wants access, but it's up to you as the API publisher to decide whether they get let through. So I'm going to require subscription approval. I hit save. And that's ready. Now I just need to add my API to this and publish it. This is a key thing I often forget, and I go looking, and I'm like, where's my API gone? So always remember to publish. Oh, I need to add an API first. Sorry, my mistake. Let's add the API, the calculator Matron API, and then we can publish it. Yes, publish. So it's now live, which is cool. So I think the best way to show you that is to take a look at it on the developer portal, which is where partners will experience your API. So you can get to it up here. Oops. Didn't mean to do that. And this is pretty much the developer portal that we give you when it arrives. I've actually made a little change up there to make it uglier with the blue banner at the top, but I'm going to show you as well very quickly how to customize this. So this is the experience that you can give to your partners in terms of when they turn up for your business. But don't be, this looks great, but it can look way better and it can look really, really customized. So you'll have seen on Monday that we showed this portal, which is running on the system and was styled on the system. So Wellmark are one of our three public launch customers. We have a couple of others that have gone public with us at launch, but we haven't done sort of the PR agreements with those guys yet. So Wellmark are one. I talked about those on Monday. We have another called Blue Garden. So here's their themed portal. These guys do payroll systems and are very much in a similar scenario where they're doing indirect monetization through their API by trying to make their experience best with partners, so with their customers, so that more customers choose Blue Garden. And then we have Speak2It. Again, this is another experience that's running on the actual Azure API management platform today. And Speak2It is a service that, you know, does voice processing, so it can receive voice and turn it into text, et cetera, et cetera. So all these guys are live on our service now and styled these experiences with very little effort and very little knowledge of CSS, et cetera. And I'll show you how you can do that in a moment. So you can achieve a really great experience with the with our developer portal. This is where people would come. If I wasn't already signed in as an administrator up here, then as a developer, I could sign up down here and subscribe for a product. Because I am signed in as an administrator, I get access to everything. And as I zoom in, as I click on APIs, notice how we can see my calculator Matron API, and there's the text I entered. So you see how that metadata is now driving this experience that people have. So I'm going to click on calculator Matron. Let's take a look at our one operation over here. I could have entered a vanity name here rather than this ugly URL. I just forgot to do so. But it has all the information I need to start invoking this API, including the full URL down here. It has the details on the parameters. You can see that they're mandatory. It has a description for each parameter, what the data type was. And again, as I showed on Monday, it has that code generation. So we can do JavaScript. I'll have to zoom out for this. So there's the code required to call this API from a web client. We can do .NET, of course. This is the code that you'd need to call that guy. All the way through to things like Ruby, Curl, Python, and even Objective-C for iOS developers. This one's pretty long, but that's iOS for you. So here we go. So let's have a look at the developer console. Okay. So the console is that interactive experience. And again, this is dynamically generated based on the metadata that you've entered. So I'm just going to pop open the console. And notice that I now have a form that understands my parameters. So it's telling me what I should enter into these. So let's add a number. Shout out a number, sir. I want you to prove this is real. 10. Oh, I honestly don't know what that's going to do. That might break it. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. What can go wrong? You want to change your mind? Oh. Do you know what? If it goes wrong, I've got a little joke. It's a very bad joke. Oh, wait, you saved. It went well. Okay, so my code is awesome. Look, so we got a response that is 9. How about that, huh? So when I tell people, did any applause? Yep. What for? Yeah, don't worry about that. Okay, so you get the idea. Oh, sorry, you get the idea. You can see what's going on there. It works. What I was going to say, if it went wrong, I just want to let you know, I was going to say, Houston, we have a problem. Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry. I see why I do this and not comedian. Okay, so, right, you get the idea. This is awesome. I just people love this experience. They love the console. It's certainly a lot of really cutting-edge APIs, provide this kind of experience, and look how easy you guys could provide this now. It doesn't matter who your customer is. It could be internal, it could be external. This is a great thing to have, and it comes extremely simply. Okay, so we get the console. There's one thing I don't like right now, which is XML. That's kind of, you know, that's not hip and cool, right? Wouldn't it be much cooler to do JSON? So let me show you how you could use policies to, on the fly, rewrite that response into JSON. So we're going to do that. It'll just take a few seconds. So I'm going to switch back to my management portal. I go to policies over here. And policies are kind of like little plugins you can put into the pipeline to change the behavior of an API. And I can configure these at multiple places. I can configure it for a product, like we just added a product. I can configure it for an API. Or I can configure it for a specific operation, like the calculatormatron. So let's go drill into that. And you'll see that actually, because we turned on caching for that API, it's already defined some policies for me. I'm going to add to this now. What we're going to do is, in the outbound response here, we're actually going to add another piece of code that adds another policy. And I want to show you this huge list of policy statements we have over here on the right. So things you can do range from allowing cross-domain calls, adding CORS support. So I used to work on the Azure Mobile Services team, and at some point we added CORS to our project. It took like 3 weeks of dev time. It was not easy at the time. It was a really difficult thing. You could now add CORS, which gives you allows browsers to call from a different domain to your service with just a click of some configuration here. Super, super easy. Works really well. We can do some advanced caching stuff. We can even do JSONP, which allows those cross calls to even come from legacy browsers, which is very cool. We can do things like, we can even do things like find and replace the string in a body. We can mask URLs. We can restrict caller IPs. We can rewrite URIs. We can fiddle with headers that are coming through the pipeline. You kind of get the idea. And we have plans to add a lot more here and even add the option for you guys to supply your own, which would be very cool. I'm going to use the XML to JSON converter. So I'm just going to click here. I'm going to click this guy. And then I'm going to set some options here. I'll show you guys what I'm doing. I'm going to say I'm going to ignore the header. Sorry, I'm struggling here when I'm zoomed in a little bit, making a few clumsy maneuvers. I'm going to always ignore the header and always force this to happen. Again, I'm going to reiterate that for a different set of settings. And I personally prefer the direct look than the JavaScript friendly, because I think it creates prettier JSON. So I'm going to choose that, but you could choose a different option. I'm going to hit save, and that change is now being pushed out to our API proxies. So if I now go and invoke this from my console, we should see a different response. So let's go hit post. And notice that now, instead of an XML response, we have a JSON response. Very cool, very cool. And it's just automatically mapped it. I didn't have to describe any mapping. It's just applied the smarts there to the response to do that. OK, so that's XML to JSON. I think one other thing I could show quickly was a recap of the rate limiting demo. But I'll show that at the end if we have time. But you've already seen how we're doing for time. OK, we've got a little bit. You've already seen how easy it is to do rate limiting, because we showed that on Monday. I want to show you one thing now. It's a very quick demo of the styling of the developer portal. So here's the developer portal now. I want to make this look a little different. I'm not going to go far with this, but give you a sense of the experience we're trying to provide. So I switch into the management portal. And down here, you can see developer portal as a heading. So this is where I'm going to be able to control what goes on there, including the content. So I can change the content. Let's change this. I'm going to change the welcome page a little bit and say, hi, TechEd 2014. And then in massive letters, I'm going to say this can add numbers. My price has gone up. Hit save. And then I can publish that. So I'm going to publish that change out. So we actually have a CMS underlying the developer portal. And so if I go and refresh this now, I need to go home. If I go to my home page, hopefully we've picked up. Yeah, so we're starting to change some of the content. Very slick. I can change the banner here and start adding images. One of the coolest things, though, is the way I style this. So I'm going to go over to Appearance. And then I'm going to resume customization. Normally you would say begin customization, but I was experimenting with this one a little earlier. So it gives me this page that kind of shows me what all the elements are that are available to me. This is sort of a nonsense page. It's just there for the purposes of styling. But one cool thing is, whilst I'm actually styling the portal, I can switch to my real pages so you have a sense of how it's working. And I can style this in real time now. So I'm going to slide over here, and then I go to pick an element. I select an element to customize. I'm going to change that ugly blue there back into white. So now I get this picker, and it shows me all the different variables. And for the web developer, you know, friendly, this is actually less variables. So if you're familiar with less, great, you can come in and apply that knowledge. If not, you know, you can actually style this pretty easily anyway. I can do it, and I don't really know much about less. So I'm going to go in here. I get a beautiful color picker. I'm going to choose white. I hit preview changes, and that should update in just a second. There we go. So now I've got a new look portal up here. We can start to change so many things and do it easy. The well-marked portal that we styled for the keynote is something we can do in about 30 minutes and get that whole look and effect to make it exactly match the brand. So it's really impressive what you can do. So you get the idea there on the styling of the developer portal. All right, I think that's it for demo for a while, and then if we've got time, I'll come back and we'll have some rate limiting fun. I'll go off track. I'll go off record. Switch back to the deck. So this is our preview release. I think we're pretty pleased with just the sheer number of features that we have in this release. And of course, we're ambitious over in Azure. We will be adding a lot of features as time goes. We'll have a very, very regular cadence as we add new features. And one thing is that we're extremely customer-driven. So we're always very, very keen to engage with customers. If any of you guys are interested in using this service, or have a friend or partner or another business that is, then please put them in touch with us. Reach out to me personally. I'll actually put an email address up on the screen later where you can reach the team. We'd love to engage with you. And as we add new features, we're trying to be very customer-driven in doing so. So a quick run through of some of the things that we can do. I'm just going to run through these quickly. I'm not going to go through everything. So the developer experience, one thing I didn't show there is I hinted at it that you can sign up. So let me switch back actually to the portal. I want to show you this. In the management experience, one thing we can do is we can enable social auth. So I'm just going to show you where that is. So we go to the security tab here. And when partners come to this system, they have initially they're presented with the choice of signing in with their own account. They can basically create an account with an email and password, right? But not everybody wants to do that, so you may want to enable some of these social scenarios so they can log in with Facebook or Google accounts. If I check this, it'll start to ask me for some settings. I think I can probably just put some gobbledygook in here, and we will be good. Google account, some settings, probably some gobbledygook is fine. I don't think there's any validation there. Okay, great. So I hit save, and that's now enabled. So if I now go to my developer portal, actually, I'm just going to copy and paste this and do it in a private window so you guys see it without me logged in as an administrator. So see, it says sign in. I hit sign in, and now I get presented with the sign-in experience. So this is kind of the welcome experience for your partners. And now they could sign in with Facebook or with Google just using those links at the bottom, and that was just configured by us. Obviously, one feature we have our eye on here is for improved AD integration. So if anybody needs that, I'd really love to hear from you, and then we'd love to have a deep conversation around how that would work, what you would need from it. A couple of people nodding, so you definitely need to take my email address before you go today, because we'd love to have a chat with you about it. So that's one part of the developer experience that I hadn't showed. So should I sign in? No. Actually, what I'm going to do is now mention another aspect, is issues. So on the developer portal, we have this issues tab. And I mentioned that developer engagement is kind of key to having a successful API program, right? If you're going to do that, you need a way for not just for you to broadcast all your latest announcements or what your APIs look like. You need a way for developers to reach back to you to say, oh, I had a problem with this API. There's a bug in this piece of the documentation. This thing doesn't work as I expected. How should this work? And so we have that built into the developer portal. And you'll get notified, actually, on the management portal when there's an issue for one of your APIs. If I go to APIs here, actually on the dashboard, sorry, you'll see that over here, these things say issues 0. I get a report of the issues for each of my APIs as I zoom in. And one really neat thing is whenever you have new issues, this thing shows with a red border. So it kind of zooms in. You've got your single pane of glass. I can manage all my developer interactions right from here. I can go in and respond to that feedback, or I can delete it. Very cool. And applications is another thing I want to mention. I should have put some data in here, but I haven't, so forgive me. Often when people are launching an API in the hope that it engages people to build and integrate, say, mobile apps as an experience, it's very difficult for the API publisher to know about the mobile app that was built, but they want to know about it. They want to know that such an app was built using this portal. And so what we did was provide a way for partners to submit the applications that they've created and details about them using this application's experience here. So then you can do things like cross-promotion. One of the customers I didn't mention that's running on the Epiphany system is Fantasy Data. So let me show you their developer portal, which is also similarly themed to look like exactly like their own brand. And these guys, they supply data on the NFL that's really awesome for people building fantasy football apps, etc. You'll see it's all, again, running on the sort of the same system. And they have products that map to our products, and this is how they sell their products. So their developer license is $29 a month, has different behaviors because it's configured with different policies at that product level. And likewise, all the way over to the enterprise license, which is, you know, $1,000 a month. And the documentation is all generated just as you would expect. They have an awesome console, and developers like using it. Now, these guys also, on their main website, have a list of the applications that are, some of the applications that are built using this. And that's one of those great things that the application gallery is for. It provides a way for your partners to communicate with you and let you know what they're doing with your service. Okay. And I think I can go on to the last slide, and then we're going to try and do a little, since we've got a little bit of time left, we've got like 20 minutes left, and I'll leave time for questions, don't worry. We'll have time to have a bit of a fun with the demo and see if we can get the rate limiting going with you guys hitting it. Okay, so switch back to the deck. Don't worry, there will be more. One more demo. Don't go just yet. I do want to recommend another session on this. So my colleagues Vlad and Anton will be giving a session at 8:30 a.m. tomorrow. It'll be a similar session, but a completely changed vent, where I spent sort of, you know, 30 or so minutes talking about API business models and so on. These guys are going to cut to the chase and just do a lot of hands-on demo. It's going to be a lot of fun. I believe they have some kind of interaction from you guys by hitting an API going on in there. Maybe even some prizes or something. So it's very worth checking that out, particularly if you're interested. Come and find out more and see literally just a whole session of hands-on interaction. The preview is available in Azure right now, so you guys should go and try this for sure. And we already have a ton of updates in the pipeline. Two I will call out is a management API, which allows you to control everything I've controlled via the portal using, you know, from another backend or using a scripting tool, etc. And another from that actually is OAuth. So we will add OAuth support to our console. So if your API supports open authentication, then we'll support that in this system as well. And more updates are going to be coming all of the time. I've already mentioned, actually, I really want to say this before anyone does leave. We're very, very keen to engage. So we're a very communicative team, very happy to talk to customers. My email address is jtwist, I'll put this on screen in a moment, @microsoft.com. I'm very happy for you to reach out to me directly. Or APIMGMT is our kind of API management alias. You should definitely come and talk to us. People nodding about AD, I would like to hear from you and have a conversation about what your expectation is of that feature. Because what we deliver, we're trying to tailor very much to real, deep conversations that we're having with customers. I knew I had the email address somewhere, so there it is. So if you want to reach the whole team, you can reach us at apimgmt@microsoft.com. This deck, I guess, is available to you guys anyway, so you can grab it, but make a note now, otherwise I'll leave it on screen for a second. And then I think whilst we've got some remaining time, let's take a few questions now, and then I'll do a little demo with, we'll do some, have some more fun with rate limiting. Any questions at this stage? Yep. So the question was around, can I get to the data that's inside the portal and pull that out? And the answer is not just yet, but very soon. So that's the management API that we're providing. So pretty much everything you've seen me do in that management portal experience, we're going to make sure that you can access through a management API. Make sense? Yep. Great question. So all of the Azure APIs, as you can imagine, that isn't a simple conversation, but of course we are. Let me rephrase the question so everyone can hear it. I think the question was, Azure has APIs. Why doesn't it have these capabilities so I can play with the console and so on? We're very much working on that. We're having conversations with all the right people. It's something we'd love to light up. It's a big beast to move. You know, there's a lot of surface area there. But yeah, we'd love that to happen. Obviously, it'd be a great result for everybody, I think, to have a console that people could try like that. So yeah, thanks for the feedback. Yeah, cool. Any other questions? So to prevent denial of service attacks, it really depends on the scale. So yes, to a degree. So the rate limiting is the common one, which I'll show in just a moment, which allows you to throttle individual partners. There are certain things that we rely on the underlying Azure infrastructure to, like, you know, if something's hitting you with a distributed denial of service attack, like a ping death, then we don't take care of that level of DOS protection. That comes from a lower part of the Azure service, the Global Foundation Services, and they have some protection there for DOS attacks. Four to 6 weeks, I would say, for that. Yeah. So very soon. It's the first thing we're doing. So the question was, what is the time frame for the management API? So we're working on it right away. Our goal is to get it in your hands within 6 weeks. Yep, so very soon. And if there's specific reasons you guys are asking about that, you know, we would love to talk to you, because what we would do is we would talk to you about our early plans for this management API. We want to make sure we got all the corners covered so that, you know, we don't ship something that doesn't meet your requirements. So seriously, you've got the email address up there, or jtwist@microsoft.com, or chat to these guys down here, and we'd be really interested in knowing more about it. So some people are far away. There are mics here that are live. It's great that we've got so many questions, actually. I may not get to my demo. But if you want to come up and come to the mic, or would you rather just shout? Sounds like we'd rather just shout. I'd say I'm going to come running out there with a mic. Let's do it. I feel like I'm on.
While you're walking, I go to the mic.
Whose hand's up? This guy. I think someone I'll pay over here was first. Yeah, this guy.
So I may have missed this, but what authentication mechanisms are you supporting now and later if your API is private?
Great. So hopefully everyone heard that because it was on the mic. What authentication mechanisms are we supporting now and later if your API is private? So at the moment, we support just one basic authentication, actually, for connecting to the back end. You can support more advanced scenarios by using the policies. One common thing that we see people doing right now is setting a header inside the proxy that exchanges a secret then with the actual back end, and that's how you make sure that you're calling the right person. People doing that when calling, for example, hosting an API in Azure Mobile Services, you can specify the application key in the proxy, and then you know it's only your server calling it. We do plan to add mutual certificate authentication, though. We think that's going to tick boxes for a lot of people. I'm interested to hear feedback on whether VPN would be a very desirable solution that people would want to use, so that you can actually join the proxy to a VPN for your on-premise APIs. Does that answer the question? Is there anything I missed? The cert, I can't give you it in weeks, but it's very high on our priority list. So soon. I should mention, actually, we're going to ship the service every 2 weeks at least. So it'll be updating frequently. Sometimes you'll just get performance and maybe a bug fix that you won't even know about. It'll be seamless. Other times you'll be getting features, and we'll announce those. The question was, how is the cost calculated? So I can actually bring up the pricing page on azure.microsoft.com. Let's do that. And let's show the pricing. I probably should have had a slide on this, actually. This is the Azure portal. You guys all know. You hit pricing. You go down to API management, and you will see our pricing here. So I'll go into the details. Let's zoom in, see if we can get that on screen. So there are basically two tiers, developer and standard. The price per unit month, so what the price is during preview, a 50% discount. So the price after preview for these tiers will be $99 per month and $699, or just under $700 per month. That is prorated daily. So if you only use it for one day, we only charge you for one day of that. We don't charge you for the whole month. So if you just want to come in and try it out for a few days, then you know, you only get charged, I think it's $1.50 or something for the developer edition. It's based on API calls. So 5 million API calls is included per month in developer, and 200 million in standard. It includes some free data transfer, so 25 gigabyte for developer and a terabyte for standard. But actually, if you go over on that, then we just charge you standard Azure data transfer rates, which are very, you know, they're pretty cheap, they're very reasonable. So you don't need to scale up a tier. The caching, so we have a 10 megabyte cache in developer and a gigabyte of cache in standard. And for scaling, you can scale standard up to 4 units, which gives you 800 million API calls, as an example. Does that answer the question? We do have plans for more tiers in the future. Falling over. Anyone else with a question? I think there was another guy down there. Here I come, running. Action man, this guy and then you guys. You can't see anything up there. This is awesome. So many questions. You're next to a mic. You made me run all the way down. He's actually sat next to a mic.
Can you like disable and enable your account if you're going to turn it off for a few days and then and not lose all the data that you've set up?
Oh, that's a good question. So you're trying to save money on billing by setting it up and then turning it off.
Or does it tear the whole thing down?
And the answer is no right now, but that's a good request. Right. So what we should probably have is at least some way to pull everything out and then restore it, perhaps. That's a good feature request. We don't have that now.
So I guess the other question is, how would you go about version controlling all the data that you put in there? Because you could build up a lot of content, and you want to track that because it becomes, you know, it's all public.
Yeah, that's so I don't know if people could hear the question. It was around versioning controlling of the content that you're putting up there. So I guess you're saying you want, is this around workflow? Or if you make a mistake, you want to roll back to a previous version?
Yeah, and have traceability of everything.
I see. So that isn't built into the system right now. It is something that's on our radar. I think we'd be interested to see how that mechanism would best work for people. Like, would you like to see this stored in TFS? Would it be something we should do for you somehow? So I don't think we have the answers to that yet. We don't have the capability, but again, it's another thing we're very keen to engage on.
If you started using your management API, then you could store all that, source of that.
Yeah, I think that will be probably be the answer in the near term, is that it's based on your kind of, you write scripts that deploy this thing, and you write, you know, a lot of your documentation can be stored in Waddle and Swagger files, as you saw, that was an import mechanism. So when you get really serious, you're probably not going to be spending all your time entering this stuff. Maybe you enter it, then you export it.
Yep.
And then there's nothing that stops you storing that in a source control system.
Can you export it now?
Yes, you can export it
now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. There are a few limitations to what can be exported, like the styling, I don't think we do now. But naturally, that's something that, again, we have on our radar. There was more questions over here. No? Oh, it's Don. Hey, Don.
Federation with AD... Azure AD, any plans for that? If you build a broader portal experience and you just want to have a subset of this?
Again, super high on the radar, a very common ask, and something we're very keen to do soon. Yeah. How many people in the room would need or want Active Directory integration for that developer sign-up? I can't see. Actually, let me turn the question around then. How many people wouldn't need that? Small smattering. Okay. Cool. Who else had a question? There was someone else, I think. Oh, this guy here.
Are those PowerShell scripts, and is that doable now?
So scripting isn't doable now because we don't have the management API. But as soon as we have that, you'll be able to script against it. And we'll look to add a PowerShell client as well. Yeah. OAuth support is super high on the list. It's coming.
So you mentioned that it's also going to work with on-premise, right? At the beginning of the talk, you said it's not just the cloud, it's also on-premise?
So the back end can be on-premises. The proxy is cloud only at the moment.
Okay.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Is there any plans to proxy?
The guy who sat next to the mic and won't stand up just said, is there any plans what? Any plans to be able to bring the proxy on-premise? We're certainly collecting feedback on that. It's been asked a lot. Again, can we actually, since we've got this great interactive thing going on, how many people would want to be able to deploy the proxy on-premise? How many people would need? Keep your hand up if you would need it, if it's your only choice. And how many people would be happy if it was just the proxy and the analytics still happened to go up at the cloud? So I think that's most of the people who actually had the hand up. You didn't. You dropped it. You'd need everything on-premise. Finance? No, I'm trying to guess your sector you're working in. Yeah, there you go. Finance, right. Those guys. God, they're so fussy. anybody else? Any questions? Yeah, there's a guy down at the back.
Dumb question. How would this fit in with the sync service bus relay? Can this actually call the service bus relay?
Great question. So that's the other piece of tech I work on, actually, and Santosh is up at the front there. So it can work with the relay, because the relay can be used to expose a HTTP endpoint into the cloud, right? And that could become your back end. There's nothing to stop you doing that. You use the relay, project something with, say, WCF HTTP REST binding. Santosh, did I get the name right? Yep. And then you can hit that endpoint in the cloud. You can put your keys in the proxy, et cetera, et cetera. So it can work. There is a session tomorrow at 1 o'clock on a new piece of technology called hybrid connections that offers a similar connectivity but much more turnkey than relay, where it literally remotes a port magically. So you can even connect, for example, you can connect a website to an on-premise SQL database and not have to change a line of code in that website. That you could just take it from on-prem, put it in the cloud, not change a line of code, and it goes over hybrid connections from BizTalk seamlessly, which is a similar type of technology. That's something we'll probably integrate into API management as well. So you should check out that session at 1. It's not showing up on the scheduling at the moment for some reason. There's a problem. But it's worth checking out at 1 o'clock tomorrow if you want to know more about hybrid like that. Ballroom C at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Oh, great question. The issues I showed on the dashboard, is that integrated with TFS? No, it isn't. But I think technically, once we have the management API, they have an API, you could make that happen. And maybe we could as well, and it's something we should do. So, one thing we do have, actually, is if you go to feedback.azure.com, we have a user voice. We're super keen for you to have deep conversations, not just user voice requests. So please reach out to us on email. But I will say that for requests like this, it's very worth going up to feedback.azure.com. And then down here on the right, we have API management. You can see we've got a bunch of stuff coming in already. On-prem agent, we talked about integration with web API custom policies. You guys should get in and make sure these things are heard. You know, integration with TFS online for issues, that's a pretty cool idea. It's actually very similar to what the guys showed on the keynote, I guess, right? Any other questions? Okay, I'll get to you in a moment. Let's do this guy because he's nearby.
So, what gets provisioned when you create one of these? Is it a web service, or tell me more about
that. So the details are deliberately abstracted because we can change them over time as we need to, as we evolve the service. But effectively, we're fairly low to the metal. It's not VMs, it's not IS, but we're using worker roles, I think, are the main things that we're provisioning. So we're provisioning, depending on the tier, you go for a number of worker roles. Some are processing analytics. Some are handling the web traffic. The IP is not static yet, right? But we potentially would enable that feature. It could come. It'll come from the range of IPs that Azure can come from at the moment. We were just chatting on mail the other day about whether, would that be a thing you'd need to lock it down to a single IP?
Maybe. So, I was having a conversation just yesterday about maybe concerns about on-premise services being exposed.
I see. So you're most worried about, so you've got an on-premise service, you want to expose it, but you want to make sure the only thing that's talking to your service is our proxy, and then everyone else is coming through that.
Yeah, would, just trying to figure out what you
need. Right. And would a VPN, Okay. And the other thing might be this hybrid connection. So the session at 1 o'clock tomorrow is not available for API management yet, but if you understood the technology and thought it would fit with API management, we'd be pretty interested to hear that. So there was a guy over here that had a, I've not give this side of the room much love.
So a lot of APIs have to contend with versioning of their APIs. Is there any thought to making versioning a first class citizen of your portal and your management experience?
Yes. No, seriously, there is. I mean, we have some best practice and guidance around how you can do versioning today. Because we have the abstraction, it's kind of the perfect platform for it. Places where you might first class that experience that we've sort of brainstormed is around the documentation. How do I pick which version I want so I'm not just doing it by /1/? We don't have it yet, as you'll have observed, but it's certainly on the radar. Is that critical for you? Would you put it above some of the other features we've talked about today, like AD, for example?
We have an existing set of APIs that are very strongly versioned, and they would have significantly different documentation. It would be crucial for us.
I see. Okay. Got it. Cool. Any other hands up? I think some over there. Yep. This is awesome. So I think what's happening here is you're running me out of time to do my extra demo. But that means you have to go to tomorrow's session and watch the demo, because it's going to be way more interactive and fun anyway. So you should go at 8:30 tomorrow, right? Where was the hand? Here it was. Here.
Well, we have currently is that we have an API, but every customer has their own specific sort of domain. And is there a way to get them together in the management, but have them redirect to?
So this is what we... kind of routing. So you want to say you have one API, and based on some conditional artifact of the request, perhaps, you want it to go somewhere else. We don't have it now, but we think of it as a very high priority item, and so expect it to arrive on one of those frequent trains we've got coming in the near future. Yeah, it's something we're really keen to do. Yeah. We realize there's a huge opportunity there. It's important for multi-tenant support. Can you explain that?
Is a multi-tenant system, mm-hmm. So we have many customers that use the same system, and if we are exposing an API, we'd like to have one API for all customers, and yet determine which customer is using which.
Right.
So,
right.
Not to mention that you could potentially customize it for each customer, but
yeah, makes sense. Cool, good scenario. Yeah, we know that's important. Anybody else? Okay, so I'm going to leave you with this note. It sounds like a few of you should definitely be going to the hybrid connections session tomorrow at 1 o'clock. You should all be going to the 8:30 a.m. session on API management and see even more of the demo I was going to show, because we've missed out. We're pretty much out of time now. I don't have time to show that. And I think I just want to say thanks for showing up and getting so engaged. It's been awesome. Thank you. Let me put that email address back up on screen so you guys can... hits us up with that. Thank you.